next announcements.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Trivia Fundraiser for Northeast Neighborhood Emergency Teams on Thursday, January 11th at 6 p.m. at the Lagunitas Community Room in Portland. This fundraiser includes disaster theme and pop culture trivia led by Katie Wolf, food, beer, cider, and information about your local neighborhood emergency teams. Again, that's the Trivia Fundraiser for Northeast Neighborhood Emergency Teams on Thursday, January 11th at 6 p.m. at the Lagunitas Community Room, 237 Northeast Broadway Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Stop the Pipeline rally on Thursday, January 11th at the Oregon State Capitol in Salem. The No LNG Exports Coalition hosts this day action at the Oregon State Capitol building to ask Governor Brown to deny the Pacific Connector Fracked Gas Pipeline and Jordan Cove LNG Export Terminal. Carpools are available. Again, that's the Stop the Pipeline rally on Thursday, January 11th at the Oregon State Capitol, 900 Court Street, Northeast in Salem. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, here we are on the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It's time for the Dirt Bag. Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. And nobody is beside me today. Jim is in Salem or on his way to Salem for a meeting there, but he will be back in February. Or so he says. Who knows what his travel plans are. Nevertheless, I've got a packed show today. At about 11:15, we will finally get, assuming that the phones are working. Tammy gives me the thumbs up. We got the phones this year, or this month. You may remember going back 1 year on the January Dirtbag show, I had to bus here because the snow was too deep for bicycling, or I didn't want to drive. So that was a year ago now, within a day or two. But at 11:15, since we have the phones, we will have Frankie Bocciolieri on to talk about Temperate Orchard Conservancy, that's it, and find out all about that. Which is a kind of a neat thing, but we'll find out about that. About 11:15, Frankie will join me on the phone. Our plant of the month is rootstock. I'll just talk a little bit about that and give you some ideas of why some trees get bigger, fruit trees get bigger than others, and rootstocks that are available. And right along with that, our dirtbag dictionary word today is scion, or scion wood. And that, believe it or not, is going to be also the theme of our music selections today. Got an interesting garden stumper at half past the hour. We will also be talking about cover crops and what to do with those in the spring. Also, that this is the time to be gathering scion wood and to be doing winter grafting. And so I'll mention that too. And a big chore for fruit growers is pruning. And I'll give you my list of what I prune now and what I prune later and what I prune much later. So all of that. But first of all, we'll start with the rootstock. And let me tell you that if you do have a gardening related question and you need an answer, or at least my take on it, 503-231-8187. It's the number to call. Tammy would be happy to direct you to me. I think she would anyway. Maybe. Oh, yes, another thumbs up. Okay, rootstock. That's the... We talk about this almost yearly, but rootstock is that part of the tree that if you're going to be grafting a tree, that's the part that's planted. And not only does it have roots, but it has a little stick of wood on the above ground, which you would be grafting on the scion wood. We might as well talk about what the scion wood is right now. That's our dictionary, dirtbag dictionary term for today. And we just call it scion wood, but it's a piece of wood that has come off the parent tree, if you will. So we'll take, for example, Honeycrisp. I guess it's a good apple. I don't know that I've ever really tasted it too much. Another thumbs up. Well, that was somewhere along the line, either a seedling apple, which is just by chance, a bird ate an apple and pooped out the seed along a fence row, and then the tree grew, and it produced fruit. And boy, that's pretty tasty fruit, or that's very tasty fruit. It also could have been bred purposefully in the laboratory or out on a farm where, okay, we like this one, we like this one, let's hand pollinate it, for example, and we will preclude all other pollen from getting to this apple and or this blossom, and so we'll see what fruit comes from that. I'm not sure how it happened with the apple that we were talking about, Honeycrisp. Although it was patented for quite a few years, whatever the length of years is, 15 or 12 years or something like that, although now you can do it free. But every apple, every Honeycrisp apple that that has come from that first tree is a clone of that tree. The researchers and developers and farmers took off a slice, just a cutting of that tree, and then grafted it onto the rootstock. So we've got the scion wood, and generally that's a piece of wood about the size of a pencil from new wood on the tree. So it grew within the last year. That's the scion wood. We take a cutting when the tree is dormant, which is now. It's not growing. There's no new buds or anything like that coming on to the tree. It's dormant. That's when we take scion cutting. So if you have a tree that you want to start, now is the time to get the owner's permission and grab some scion wood. I'm going to do that with my neighbor's tree. It's got, I think it's a Fuji, and grows very well in this area, and the fruit hangs on the tree a long time, which is what I'm impressed with. It was still in December, then there was still edible fruit on it. And so I'm just going to take a scion cutting of that, and I will keep it in the refrigerator. And one more thing about when you're taking scion wood cutting is that you want to make sure you have the upside and the bottom side. And so typically when it gets turned around, you will know we make the top of the cut an angled cut and the bottom of the cut a flat cut, because undoubtedly they'll get turned around and you'll be confused. And it's hard to tell without those buds coming out. So then you'd store it in the refrigerator, grab a plastic sack, put some water in it, and shake the water out so there's just still a little coating of water in there, and put the scion wood in there, and you'll hold it there until you graft it, which would be next month, February, or even into March. But before it breaks its dormancy, although sometimes they do break their dormancy even in storage, and you still can go for it and it'll work. But so that's scion wood. In other words, it's cloning wood. Everything that has come from one tree of a certain variety. And that's pretty remarkable. Now, rootstock is plant or variety specific for the most part. For example, you can't graft pears onto apple rootstock. It's just not compatible. Having said that, there are some rootstocks that are compatible with some. For example, quince. You can graft quince onto quince rootstock, and maybe even some pears onto quince rootstock. But not everything goes that way. And I have a list here of different types of rootstocks, and there might be, well, there's more than what the list that I have here, but they have some pretty, I don't know if you'd say unusual sounding names like EMLA27. Well, what does that mean? Well, that mostly what that means is that the EMLA comes from the research station where the rootstock was developed. So EMLA is probably East Malling something, probably London or England, but I'm not sure on that. P22 is what I use a lot of, which is Poland 22. I don't know what the 22 stands for. It might have been the 22nd rootstock in a row of the experiment. That's just what it is. And the reason that I like P22, especially for espaliered trees, is that because even without any pruning at all, the tree will only get 4 to 8 feet tall. And then, so the EMLA is size 4 to 8 feet, and P22 is size 4 to 8 feet, but then we get to B9, or a bud 9. I'm not sure what that B stands for, I mean the bud, but what the significance of bud 9 is. But it's 8 to 12 feet. So I'm simplifying here, but if you were to graft the same type of scion wood onto a P22 and then a B9, well, the B9 tree would just be a lot bigger. And you could go all the way up to EMLA M.111. Now, let's not use that. Let's use Mark. It'll get 18 to 22 feet. So oftentimes, if you go to a nursery, it will say semi-dwarf. Well, Mark would be considered semi-dwarf, or an M26 would be considered a semi-dwarf. But still, that gives you an 18 to 22-foot tree, which is way too big for most home gardens. And in fact, the commercial growers don't grow anything more than the fully dwarfing trees now. It's just easier to take care of. It's easier to prune, to pick, to spray, if that's what you're going to do. So be wary of a tree that says semi-dwarf and doesn't give you the type of rootstock that it is. You know, our recommendation is to ask, if it doesn't say on the tag what the rootstock is, to ask. And if they can't tell you, then to go to a different store, because you put in a lot of time and effort and a couple of years before you get fruit, and you don't want the wrong size tree. It's worth paying a few extra bucks, and they're not that much anyway. You can get, you can make, when you go to one of the Home Orchard Society's events in March, I don't have the date here with me, although I can find it out very quickly, where it's the fruit propagation fair, where you can get a tree for about 10 bucks, you know, whatever variety you want. So that's a pretty good deal. So that's apple rootstock. There's also some other types of rootstock for cherry. And I'll have to say that there's really not good fully dwarfing cherry rootstock. This tree is still going to be upwards of 20 feet, even though the literature will say, 10 to 12, 15 feet. So I wouldn't believe that part. And oftentimes, you know, the tag says what the owner or the grower wants it to be, not rather than what it is. Peaches, nectarines, apricots, plums, there's a couple of those. St. Julian is one. Mariana is another one. European pears, we've got the Quince C or the OH by F87 or the OH by F333. These numbers, they mean something to you after if you've worked them for a while, but they don't mean anything to you right now. But here's something to keep in mind with the rootstock. With the European pears, the most dwarfing rootstock that we have available will, without pruning, your tree will get to about 18 to 20 feet. That's still pretty good size. So be wary of that too, even though you might be wanting to grow dwarf fruit. Realize that apples is really the only tree that you can keep very small just with the rootstock. All right, that's that. It's about 11:15. I'll bet you Frankie's ready to roll. Is Frankie ready? Hey, Frankie, are you with us?
I am.
All right. We get your name right, Bocciolieri?
Yes, you did. That's beautiful.
Well, I had some help. I had some help. Yeah. Well, Frankie is with both the Home Orchard Society and, I'm assuming, the Temperate Orchard Conservancy. Is that not correct?
Yes, it is. I'm one of the founders and officers of Temperate Orchard Conservancy. We call it TOC.
And we don't say the in front of it. It's just...
We can say the TOC, but I don't say that.
Yeah.
But it works because
it
is the Temperate Orchard Conservancy. So,
yeah.
So that could work too, either way.
Okay. Well, we try to get things as much as straight as we can here. Okay, so as the founder, one of the founders, how many founders are there?
Well, there are three. I believe you've already spoken with Joni Cooper several times before about Temperate Orchard Conservancy. She is the one who had the vision for the organization. And for years had wanted to do it. She needed to have a team with her, a group of people that had the same like-mindedness for the purpose and the mission and complementary gifts and a shared passion, and she found that in Sean Shepherd and me.
Oh, okay.
And so the three of us then officially and, legally founded the organization. And it's a 501c3. It was officially formed in March 2012. And it is a nonprofit organization in Oregon.
You mentioned mission. What is that?
Yes. The mission of TOC is, in three words, is save, protect, and share. The goal, the mission, the purpose is to save, protect, and share the genetic diversity of temperate tree fruits. And tree fruits, there are different kinds, but the one we focus on are apples. And we want to save the pioneer and heirloom apples that have come across our country years ago, 200 years ago, and that have been lost. There were thousands and thousands and thousands of varieties of apples 200 years ago, and now there are quite a few less than that.
Yeah.
When you go to the grocery store, you only have a few. And so we would like to rebuild that and to save it for generations to come.
How many are in the collection? Do you call it a collection?
Our collection currently is the largest of its kind in the United States and perhaps even the world.
Wow.
We have over 6,000 apple trees. 6,000 varieties of apple trees. Yes.
And you might explain, or could you explain, where you got so many.
Yes, I will do that. Joni, again, who had the vision for the organization, is friends with a gentleman from Yonkala, Oregon. His name is Nick Botner. Many people know of Nick. He spent his lifetime collecting scions and grafting heirloom apple trees. His collection consists of about 4,500 trees. Nick is now in his 90s, and several years ago agreed to have Joni copy his collection. Because with his age and time ticking by, his orchard was in disarray, and he knew that he wouldn't be there forever, and we were concerned that the land would be taken over by development or industrialization. Now, while Nick does sell his scions to many people across the United States, he gave his scions to us.
Uh-huh.
And so we have spent, we began collecting scions in Yonkala in 2011, so it's been several years. And every year we collect them, we save them. You've explained that whole process to audience. Okay.
Good timing there.
Pardon me?
Well, my explanation came right before your talk here, so we'll have an idea
great
of how people
works,
can.
So I didn't get that. But,
well, you're not digging up trees and transplanting them. That's for, let's get that out of our minds.
Yes. So we cut the wood, the sticks, the scions in the winters since 2011, and every then early spring we begin grafting. And we've had dozens and dozens of volunteers helping us graft and label and pot. And we have also, though we do have more than the apples that are in the collection at Nick's home, we have taken scions from other old orchards in the Pacific Northwest. And so we do have quite a group of wonderful trees. Let's see. I'm trying to remember what your question was.
Well, that's good that where you got these many of these trees. So 6,000 varieties, distinct varieties of trees.
I might be misspeaking there.
Okay.
I know we have at least 5,000 varieties.
Okay.
We have over 6,000 trees. And some of those are duplicates. So let's just play it safe and say we have about 5,000 different varieties.
Still, 5,000 is incredible. Are any of these trees producing yet?
Actually, we have some that are. We have, if we count the trees that produce, the percentage is quite small.
Sure.
However, when you gather them up and haul them in and put them in the refrigerators, we don't seem to have enough refrigerator space, enough counter space or tables to hold them all. So we did get quite a few apples, yes, this year. But again, the reason for our collection is not for the fruit itself. We will keep the fruit. We will, give the fruit away or sell the fruit or whatever.
Yeah.
We haven't really figured out what we're going to do with the fruit because that's not the purpose. The purpose is the protection of the variety and the dissemination of it. We'll want to be able to share it with other temperate climate zones to trade scions with people in Turkey or Massachusetts or Maine. So we want to keep the diversity, this genetic diversity, and share it. So we won't have the most perfectly pruned trees for fruit.
Right.
So it's a little bit different than having an orchard that we want to produce the fruit to eat.
Yeah, I understand that. I also would think that you'd want to, verify, this is whatever XYZ apple.
Exactly. You know that we got that is, I mean, we have started doing that. That's what we're doing now. When I said we were collecting all of this fruit and bringing it in, we've spent days mapping them out. Of course, we know each tree has got a number, and so when we're collecting the fruit, we make sure that we have the correct name. We verify that on our inventory list on our Excel spreadsheet, and then Sean and Joni, who are Apple detectives,
right,
have been identifying them. They because if someone tells us that their apple is Belle de Bosque, we aren't sure that it's that apple, that it's that tree, and
right,
so we see the apple. And so we are verifying each and every one, and that will take us a long, long time to do as well.
It is pretty remarkable at the All About Fruit Show, where guests can bring in their unidentified apples, and Joni and Sean and I don't know, they have some other people there too. There, right?
Yes.
Well,
yes,
it'll be like the what is that? Oh, the roadshow, antiques roadshow. I mean, it's kind of like that.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, the antiques roadshow for apples.
Yeah, and it just takes experience. There's just no other way to you can't. You just got to do it for years,
right,
and years and
over
years
and over. They've spent years,
right,
studying, and it's a labor of love. They love to do it, and
yeah,
they're good. They really understand the
right,
the different terminology and the diversity of these different apples. It's great to watch.
Yeah. Well, I know you're at work, so we'll wrap this up there, but just give us a little bit idea of where it is.
Sure. Fast forward to today. Again, we have many, many apples. We are in Malala. We have a farm in Malala, and we just would really appreciate people going to our website. It's www.temperateorchardconservancy.org. It's all spelled out. Easy to spell. You can like us on our Facebook page. It's Temperate Orchard Conservancy there too. Add your name to our volunteer list. Come out and volunteer. Help us plan, plant, and dream. We love other orchardists and gardeners and even the non-gardeners to come and help us out. We have a huge task.
Yeah.
Ahead of us this year, and that is to plant these trees in their permanent home in what we call the Botner block. And so we have 6,000 trees to plant.
All right, that's plenty for anybody.
Yes, we need help, we need volunteers, we need money, so
and I'm
consider making a donation.
And I'm sure one can do that at the website.
On the website, yes, you can do it on the website.
All right.
And our address and everything is there.
Right. So you don't really have visitors or field trips, but you can volunteer and see what's going on.
We usually, every Saturday, we usually volunteer, and that's something else. You can go to the Facebook page or to the website and contact us and find out if we're going to be working that weekend if you want to come, for instance, Saturday. I know we're going to be there. But other than that, when the weather is a little bit nicer, we do have a group of volunteers. If you sign up to be on our list, I send out a MailChimp type of notice to people, telling them what we're going to be doing. And we aren't going to really have tours until, until we can...
Yeah.
Can pull a tractor with a bunch of people on the
right
on the hay bales or something. The orchard's not planted yet. The trees are all in the ground in a nursery.
Okay.
But we need to get them in this 17-18 acre block that we have fenced in. We need to do that now. So yes, we definitely need help.
Well, it's a wonderful thing, and I'm glad you could tell us about it today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, Glenn. And I know that there'll be more to come, more things to talk about. Joni can talk to you about the DNA kind of work that's going to be happening, and it just seems to be never ending.
Okay, we'll be sure to have her back on the show too. So, Frankie Boccialieri.
Thanks so much, friend.
You bet, with Temperate Orchard Society. Conservancy, excuse me.
Conservancy.
Right. Okay, we'll see you at the next event.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, that's good. Let's take a musical break here. And once again, just to remind you, these are all have to do with scions, you know, the offspring of something. So we'll start out with the Beatles, Mother Nature's Son. Okay, we've reached 11:31. That's half past the hour or so. I think it will be time for the Garden Stumper. Okay, well, this is just nothing related to scions and Woodstock, but it's topical, which is what we do. The question, the Garden Stumper question, what is unique about the blooming and pollinating of filberts? Mm-hmm. I also have some more information on filberts. Yeah, why is it not called a filbert anymore? Well, the actual... From what the what do they call this? The Oregon Filbert Commission. It was called filberts, and in fact, they are known as the correct name for both the tree and the nut. The name is of French origin. Filbert trees were likely first introduced into Oregon by early French settlers. But hazelnut is how it's known around the world. How did that happen? Well, those darn English coined that name and applied it to the native species by early settlers. But caving to pressure, I guess, in 1981, the Oregon Filbert Commission decided to conform to the common standard and began emphasizing hazelnut. So if you were born in Oregon before 1981, which I certainly was, filberts it is for me. It probably always will be. So if you know what is unique about the blooming and pollinating of filberts, then give us a call, 503-231-8187. Meanwhile, we will go to the phone for Matt, I believe. Yes. Matt, good morning. You're with the Dirtbag. There you are, Matt. Go ahead.
Oh, now here I am. Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Love the show. And
thank you.
Calling with a question about a sickly apple tree that I've got in my backyard. I planted myself, I guess it was like 7 or 8 years ago.
All right.
I planted actually two the same spring. One is a Spitzenberg variety. The other's a Pink Lady.
Okay.
And, sort of still I'm extremely novice in the garden, but I did enough research at the nursery to at least try to choose two trees that would cross-pollinate if they were
okay
at the same time. Besides that, didn't put a whole lot of research into it. So at any rate, at this point now, my Spitzenberg doing really well. Pink Lady every year. It's actually this last year it didn't put up a single apple.
Let me interject here. Did it put up any blossoms?
Blossoms it did, yeah.
Okay.
And part of it, and who knows, last spring was kind of a weird one. And
it sure was.
Trees, they bloomed out of sequence. I don't know how much that would have to do with it. Although I know there's there's tons of apple trees all through my neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
Besides that, there's also ants. The ants love that tree.
Yeah.
I haven't really done much to actively combat that. So I guess I was just wondering, what would the main, considerations that maybe I overlooked when I, chose the spot or planted the species or some type of care type thing? Like, what are the big main novice mistakes that people make when they're trying to raise an apple tree from infancy?
Yeah, I don't know that there's any particularly problems of those varieties. I mean, there are some that are what we call triploids that have an unusual number of chromosomes in their blossoms, so it takes different kind of pollination, but you've matched that up. One thing about the ants is probably that they're after the aphids that are in the tree on the leaves. If you've noticed rolling leaves and just aphids. That's what the ants would be going
exactly
after. Right. But that generally wouldn't, I mean, it could affect the fruit and fruit production if it's a very, very heavy infestation.
Mm-hmm.
But the bigger question is, well, why did you have blossoms but no fruit?
Yeah.
Whereas the Spitzenberg did have
fruit. Yeah, actually produced pretty well.
Yeah. And have they been producing before?
Yeah, in previous years, the Pink Lady's always been the underdog. Partly, I thought that might have been I planted them sort of opposing ends of my yard, and where the Pink Lady was when it was still young, there would be maybe solid 6 weeks in the wintertime where it would be almost in a permanent shadow of my garage. Now it's tall enough that the upper part of the tree gets about equal sunshine in the wintertime to the Spitzenberg, but
yeah, that's generally
for a while it had kind of a stunted beginning those first couple of years. I figured that might have been part of it.
Yeah, and so but it's had fruit before, but always under less performing.
It has, it's always been a little, like I said, a little scrawny.
Yeah, well, if it's in the shade of your garage, is it on what side of the garage is it?
It's on the north side. Like I said, it's a semi, like you were talking about earlier in the show. I bought it. It was just labeled semi dwarf and said that it, should be a 16 to 20 foot tree.
Right.
And it's probably pushing about the 18 to 20 foot range right now. So I said, this is like the upper scaffolding or whatever, part
yeah
of the tree, gets fair year round sun now, but.
Well, I don't have. It's too bad Jim's not here to give his opinion here. But I don't have. Nothing really jumps out at me. I mean, generally the north side is not great because the ground is going to remain colder longer, and so that will delay its bloom period and just everything on it. But
I see. So the So even regardless of how much direct sunlight the top of the earth is receiving, the soil temperature still plays a role in.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, the fact that they're at different sides of the yard, and what's the growing conditions of the other tree at Spitzenberg?
Oh, I'm sorry. That was chasing my son here.
Okay.
That was the phrase of the question.
The Spitzenberg, where is that? What's its? Where's that?
Oh, sure. That one. It's on. It has full and open sky. You know, the whole southern exposure.
Yeah. Okay.
And
so
it's over.
So pretty.
And it's also
pretty good.
It's on the lowest side of my yard, so I thought, you know, possibly, you know, I get a lot of kind of the swampy lawn going on. I was afraid of drainage being an issue, but it doesn't seem like it is. But yeah.
Well, I guess the only thing that I would say is, well, see how it goes this year. You know, make sure that it has, you know, if it has blossoms, you know, this is shaping up to be a more typical winter. It's taller now, which may be too tall. I don't know. That's what I mean, because I can't, there's nothing else that jumps out at me. It's just sometimes, you know, if the blossoms weren't at the same time as your Spitzenberg, and that maybe there weren't as many bees out as,
sure,
you know, during the colder period.
And,
right. So,
yeah.
You know, 1 year doesn't make a make or break it. So
yeah,
give it another year.
All right, cool. Well, I appreciate the advice.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Matt.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Nobody's going to take on the what's unique about the blooming and pollinating of filberts. Okay, that's fine. I can go on here. Well, since we're talking about pruning here, actually we didn't talk about pruning, but more fruit tree stuff, I'll give you my take here of when to prune what. Now, there are the most things are fruiting plants now are dormant. And so it would be fine to, for example, I have a list here, to prune apples, Asian pears, cherries, figs, pears, plum, quince. Those you could plant now. Prune now. On some of those, or maybe all of those, I do my personal pruning in the summer. Of apple, Asian pear, regular pear, European pear, plums. I wait until the summer because my trees are the size that I want them to be. And when one prunes in the winter, you can encourage more growth. And I don't want to do that. So I prune in the summer. Plus, it's just a lot more comfortable then. Granted, there's fruit on the vines or on the branches, so you will likely knock some off or prune some off. But nevertheless, that's when I do it. Figs, I would prune now, but realize that this is what I've learned with my Desert King, that any new growth that comes in the spring will have fruit on it next year. So if I prune on in the summer and maybe a little shoot comes out, it won't have fruit on it until the following year or the year and a half from the summer. So that's what I've determined for figs. For peaches and nectarines, I oftentimes will wait till March when there's blossoms so you can determine where the blossoms are, because with those fruit, we're going to take off about 2/3 of the new growth. I know that sounds drastic, but the fruiting habit of peaches and nectarines is such that the fruit is on the previous year's growth, and only the previous year's growth. So if you don't prune, the branches where the fruit are, it's always at the ends, so it just gets longer and longer and longer. So it's much better to take off quite a bit of growth every year. Grapes and kiwis can be pruned now. The rule of thumb for grapes, although I generally wait until February. With grapes, the rule of thumb is we're taking off 90% of last year's new growth. That's pretty severe, but the fruit is on this year's growth. So new growth comes out this year, and we've got that's where the fruit will be. So that's why we take off so much. And to finish this list here, plum. I generally wait until March for the same thing, or even in the summer, because plums you just can't get rid of. You can't slow those things down. They're really put out a lot of new growth. So if you prune now, they'll prune out. They'll put out more growth. So maybe wait until the summer too. Missed anything here? I'll talk about the caneberries after we get off the phones. Okay, who do we got? Linda.
Yes.
Good morning.
Hi. If I understand your question, you wanted to know what was unique about filbert pollination?
The blooming and pollinating of filberts, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Oh, maybe I misunderstood the question. I just know that they need a pollinator tree in order to pollinate.
Well, they do. That's true, but that's not unique.
Okay.
I mean, that's...
All right.
That's...
That's all I know about it. That's fine. I'll just listen to the program.
Okay. I think we have other guesses okay. here, too.
All right.
Thanks, Linda.
Bye.
Bye. Okay. Lee. Morning, Lee. Oh, Lee's gone. And... Nope. Okay, they're all gone. Okay, so we're looking about... the question is, what is unique about the blooming and pollinating of filberts? So Linda had a pretty good guess there in that they do require a pollinating tree, but that's not unusual. I mean, almonds also have that going on too. So, all right. Yes. Lee is back. Morning, Lee. You got a question or an answer?
I got both.
Oh, fine.
Is there a correlation with the nutrient availability of things like potassium and phosphorus relative to fruit set?
Well, indeed.
And maybe the reason that the guy wasn't getting fruit is because he didn't have sufficient nutrients to set the fruit.
Well, that's a possibility, but there would still be he would have little marble fruits. And I didn't ask him that question to tell you the truth. And generally, we've got a lot of those nutrients in the ground just naturally. So I tend to discount that a little bit, but that would have been something to ask him. But, what the condition of the leaves were, for example, blah, 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 blah.
Right, right.
So...
But, it's something that I'm trying to figure out with my trees, and, it's confusing. And, I don't know whether I, should be adding things and when I should be adding things based on, whether they're, things like rock phosphate, should I be doing it in the fall, because some of those nutrients are fairly mobile.
Well, most of them are immobile, which is tough, like calcium and whatnot. So, the kind of the standard is, well, just make sure they have a constant supply. And where do you get that? Compost. So I don't know. Typically I don't fertilize my fruit trees. And I live in the city, on about a 60-by-100 lot, with my house and whatnot. And I have about 40 fruit trees, and I add compost, but I don't recall really fertilizing.
Okay. It was just a question
there. Hey, wait a minute. I don't get any fruit either. No. I'm just kidding you. Just kidding.
You just collect trees.
Yeah, right. I'm just growing firewood.
Please, not fruit trees for
me. No, right. Okay, so.
The answer to the question, I would guess, is that they wind pollinate at this time of year.
That's exactly right. Both accounts. It's pretty unusual for a fruit or a nut, anyway, to be in the middle of winter.
I think that they're a fairly old species.
Yes. I mean, maybe even B.C.,
yeah.
And maybe you're even meaning more than that. You bet. Thank
okay.
you, Lee.
Thanks.
Good talking points there.
Bye.
When you think about it, why do we have wind pollination, or why would they rely on wind pollination? Because it's too darn cold for insects to be out there moving the pollen around. Yeah. But it is a very good early source of pollen for honeybees. And so when they're out there, because it's cool, they or when it's warmer, honeybees will go to the catkins, as we call them, which is the source of the pollen, and it flies and lands on little red buds, which remains kind of dormant until the nut starts forming in June. Let's take another break. This is from 1970s album called A Lot of Bottle. That's a great title. From the Climax Blues Band. This is an old Willie Dixon song, but Seventh Son. And you might think about this, you know, you could have clones of a clone of a clone of a clone of a clone of a clone, and you have your seventh apple. Seventh Son.
Everybody's talking about the seventh son. In the whole rotten world, there is only one, and I'm the one. Well, I'm the one. I'm the one, I'm the one. The one they call the seventh son. I can tell your future, it will come past. I can do things for you, make your heart feel glad. Look in the sky, predict the rain. I can tell if your woman's got another man, 'cause I'm the one. Well, I'm the one. I'm the one, I'm the one. The one they call the seventh son. I can talk these words, they will sound so sweet. Gonna even make your little heart skip a beat. Heal the sick or raise the dead. I can make little girls talk out their head, 'cause I'm the one. Well, I'm the one. I'm the one, I'm the one. The one they call the seventh son.
Oh, boy, I hate to turn that one down, but we're running out of time. Boy, they just don't have jams like that, that at least I'm just not out of the... Maybe somebody does. I suppose somebody does. I'm just out of the loop. Anyway, Climax Blues Band, Seventh Son. If we have time, and I doubt we do, I did have a daughter song here coming up, because scions can be just the offspring of something, but may not get to that. Tammy has a question, though.
Yeah, did you talk about persimmon trees, or
I didn't mention.
All right, okay.
What would you like to know about persimmon?
I just want to know when we're supposed to prune them.
Now? Yeah, that'd be fine when it's dormant.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not on my list here, so I missed it, but...
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Okay. All right, now let's get the last topic here involved. And that is cover crop. And maybe a little early to talk about it, but it's not too early to think about it. So I want to give you an idea of, you know, you've got this cover crop that's survived so far our winter. You know, it really hasn't been a real severe winter yet. I think the coldest it's been at my place is about 23, which is anytime it stays above 20, I think that's good for my plants and bees. But it's all, staying alive, and it's kind of dormant, but once we get to some warmer weather, a few weeks, it will be starting to grow, and then, of course, it will get big and bushy by March, April. And so what do you do? Well, the books always say, you know, well, you can till it into the ground and make green manure, as they say, and then and that and it provides nutrients when it breaks down in the soil and whatnot. But that's the key there, is that it doesn't really break down very quickly. And so you're left, if you do try to till it in, or you know, try to do it by hand spading, foot spading, you just end up with, you know, stalks in your soil, which makes it very hard to plant. You know, if you had a big, powerful disc on the back of your tractor, that would do it. Or if you had a very, very powerful rototiller that could chop it up, but mostly it would probably just get wrapped around the tines. And I don't recommend tilling your soil anyway. So what is one to do? I'll tell you what I do, which is very easy. And that is, I will take the, cut down the material. My favorite cover crops are fava beans and crimson clovers. Clover, both are very good nitrogen fixers. That is to say, they will, with the help of some bacteria, take nitrogen, elemental nitrogen in the air and in the soil, and convert it into nitrogen that plants can use. They store those on the roots of the plant. And when the plant dies, then that nitrogen becomes available for the plant. Excuse me, the next plants that are planted. So what I do is I let them flower, because both of those attract pollinators, particularly honeybees. And then before they start setting seed, because that takes a lot of the nutrients away from the roots, I will cut them at the ground level with either hand nipper, pruners or loppers. And in the case of crimson clover, we'll use hedge trimmers, because it just takes the, you know, you can get a lot of them, and they're pretty wimpy vines. Fava beans are can be quite thick, and they will take loppers. But I just cut it off at the base, leave the roots in the ground. The roots will rot, and I plant just right by them, because the nitrogen is right there in the root zone, right where I'm going to want it. The upper part, I either will compost or will use it as a mulch. For example, in a bed that I have, we'll say crimson clover, which is just a mat of plants, I'll cut it down with the hedge trimmers, hand hedge trimmers, and dig a hole with my post hole digger with in the root zone. I'll be digging up roots and whatnot, and add whatever I want to add to the soil to plant my tomatoes. Plant the tomato maybe 2 feet apart from each other, and then we'll use the cut out greens as mulch. Just put them right back on. I don't rototill the soil or try to get rid of any of the other roots and things that are coming up, because just by cutting them off, that kills them. You do need to pay attention if your plant has gone to seed, that, boy, they'll be coming up for quite a few years. That's a particularly pernicious problem with vetches. I know it's a good cover crop, but if you let it go to seed, boy, those little seeds will be coming up on you when you don't expect it. And that's just an easy way to take care of a couple of problems. One, what are you going to do with the greens? Two, well, do I need to incorporate it into the soil? No, you just leave the root zone there. They will rot, and the soil will, or the nitrogen that is on the roots will be available then to those tomatoes in this case. And two, you have, or three, you have not disturbed the soil any more than necessary. It's kind of the lazy ass way to garden, and that's how I describe how I'm, my approach to gardening. It's a combination of laissez-faire and laissez-ass gardening. So that takes care of that. We've got everything checked off the list here. Just 30 seconds on what's going on in the hive. The queen could be starting to lay eggs. This is the time she stopped for about the last 2 months, but now she's going to start again. And this is the beginning of the bee season for beekeepers. So it just gets busier from here on out. Okay, this is Glenn Andreessen. This is the Dirtbag. Jim will be back with me next month, or so he says. And that's my story so far. Be back in a month. Thanks, Tammy. You're the best. Be well.